Welcome to Found It to You, a monthly podcast where we talk with University of Tulsa professors about their research. I'm Jolie Jensen, Hazel Rogers Professor of Media Studies at the University of Tulsa, and today we're here with Gabriel LeBlanc, Wellspring Assistant Professor of Chemistry and Biochemistry. Welcome to Found It to You, Gabriel.
Thank you.
Glad you're here. Now, I love to begin this with just asking you to tell us in a single clear sentence who you are and what you study.
So I like to think of myself as a teacher and a scientist. And as a teacher, I'm considered an analytical scientist, which is basically looking at how we analyze chemistry. So what are the tools that we use and how do we look at doing those types of analyses? And as a scientist, I would consider myself more as a material scientist and as more specifically an electrochemist. So how does electricity and materials interact in order to get new kinds of phenomena?
Okay, well, we're going to get into more detail about that. But what I'd like to start with is how you got interested in all of this. Did you all your life want to be a chemist?
I originally went to college thinking that I was going to be a soccer star. And just as a part of being in college, I took some science courses and eventually got into a research lab, which is really where I got bit by the science bug. And I knew I was going to be a scientist when I had done the most boring experiment that is possible, which is measuring the melting point of a compound. And I got really excited about it because it was the first time anybody knew the melting point of this compound.
And a compound is?
A thiosemicarbazone,
okay, meaning
which is a specific type of chemical. We bound it to a ruthenium atom. And so this was something that was being developed for anti-cancer types of molecules. But the experiment itself was literally just watching something melt. And when I told my then-girlfriend, now-wife, about this experience, she was extremely bored by the experiment, but excited that I had gotten excited about it. And so that's what really got me started into the area of science.
And the excitement was that you were the only person on the planet who'd ever knew that. I mean, you were a first-time discoverer.
Exactly. And that it was really exciting. And so that led me into pursuing graduate school, which is where I stumbled into electrochemistry. Nobody becomes an electrochemist on purpose. We always stumble into this area. And eventually I stumbled into the research that I do now.
Okay, we've got three terms so far, chemistry, biochemistry, and electrochemistry. So can you help me parse the differences between those three? And then we can get into details about what your particular research has shown.
Chemistry is in a weird area of science in the fact that we use chemistry for so much. Mm-hmm. And so it gets divided up into a lot of subcategories so that we can more specialize in what we're trying to talk about or focus on. So chemistry in general is just the study of atoms and molecules and how they interact with different substances. So in our department, we're the Department of Chemistry and Biochemistry. So when we get into biochemistry, we're talking about how those molecules or what types of molecules are really important for biological life. Okay. So we really are emphasizing the biological aspects of those molecules and atoms in those types of systems.
So if I go back to that initial moment when you, with the new compound, you were actually doing research for anti-cancer, but in order to do so, you have to understand the basic molecules and elements and how they operate in order to do biochemistry.
Exactly.
Okay.
Right. So that we're doing underlying chemistry experiments that hopefully have applications into biochemistry. And then I got into the area of electrochemistry, mm-hmm. which is now where we're taking electricity, so just like plugging in things to a socket, and how can we use electrochemistry to either manipulate chemistry or change the types of chemical reactions that are possible.
So it's using electricity to change things and explain more. So what's this like in the lab?
Yeah, so the reason that I get so excited about electrochemistry is that for whatever reason, we have a lot of control over electricity, mm-hmm. right? We can basically think about having a dimmer switch on a light bulb where mm-hmm. we can dial in more electricity so we get more light, or we can dial it back down. And this is a really powerful tool as a chemist, because this means that we can apply different amount of voltage or energy
right.
to a chemical system. And that can allow us to really change what happens in that type of situation.
Can you tell us a little bit about the kinds of interesting things you're finding in the lab? Can you give us sort of highlights from your work so far?
Sure. So like I said, I went to graduate school, kind of stumbled into this area of electrochemistry, and that was because I was really interested in solar cells. And so I really wanted to work in the area of alternative energy and developing new types of solar cells. And as a part of that, we were trying to take materials from plants that have been doing solar energy for a really long time and integrating them with electrodes, which are basically just ways that we can combine them with electricity.
Okay.
And so what I really found or discovered in my graduate career is that you could change the properties of these solar cells just by changing the material you were using as the electrode.
Okay.
And in particular, we were using a material that's called a semiconductor, which kind of operates the way that it sounds. So a conductor is something that's a really good conductor of electricity, mm-hmm. and a semiconductor is something that's sometimes good at conducting electricity and sometimes not. And so it turned out that we could turn the switch in these hybrid systems so that the electricity only went one way, which is a really tricky aspect with using these biological materials.
Okay. Does this have real-world applications, or is this something that simply helps other researchers build better solar energy?
So, you know, at first I was really excited. We had found this new tool. We thought we were going to solve solar cells, right? And then, of course, we tried to make an entire solar cell out of the system, and there were other complications and issues. But what was really, I guess, the highlight of my thesis is the realization that you can make a better electrode just by changing the materials you're working with.
Mm.
And so I think this has much broader applications, and what led me to start my own research group here at the University of Tulsa that kind of investigates how we can utilize material science and electrochemistry in order to affect both of those two facets.
Okay, you just introduced another term, material science.
Material science is this really broad field that encompasses a lot of different types of researchers because in material science, we're interested in how different types of materials can be used for a wide variety of applications. Uh-huh. And so this pulls in researchers from engineering departments, from physics departments, chemists, biochemists,
nice.
All different types of areas. So it's a highly interdisciplinary area that I find really exciting to be a part of. But it ties into the research that I do because I really like to exploit those material properties to do new kinds of electrochemistry.
So the impression I'm getting is that you're constantly seeing how different combinations of things can work. Basically, I mean, you're doing the classic, it's kind of what the public imagines that scientists do, right, is constantly just play around. But is that a fair assessment that you must look at what might happen, but you may never know for sure until you actually do it?
So we love playing around in the lab.
Okay.
And, you know.
Well, why don't we go there? I'd love to hear what a typical day in the lab is for you.
Sure. So when most people think about doing science, they think back to the experiments that they were doing in high school or mm-hmm. college, where there was, you know, a set amount of supplies, you mix the right things together, and hopefully you get the right result, or you get really disappointed when you don't get the right result. And what I like to tell the students that join my research group is we're going to be mixing and applying electricity to a wide variety of systems, and sometimes it might work, and a lot of times it's not going to work, and it's no fault of yours. And so, you know, we can learn from all of these experiments as long as we design them to give us information whether it works or it doesn't work.
In either case, you're learning something.
Exactly. And so what we've really been getting excited about lately is the use of 3D printers and a means of combining 3D printed materials with electrochemistry. And that gives us a wide versatility because now we can change the shape of things, we can change the materials we use, and we can also have all of that control of the electricity that we have inherently in our system.
Well, I'm not sure everyone even knows what 3D printing is, so you can back up a little bit and tell us about that, and then we can go back to trying to understand what you just told me.
Sure, perfect. So 3D printing is a general ability to create a object by like having a printer that can move it in a vertical direction. So,
and it builds up layers and layers and layers of a certain material.
Sure.
Right?
Whenever I like to think about our 3D printer, I like to think about a hot glue gun. So you have the hot glue gun with this solid stick of glue that then goes through a hot nozzle, and then you can put that material, the glue, wherever you want to put it. In our 3D printer that we use, what we do is we put a material through a hot end. It melts it, and as we are melting it, we put it in a pre-programmed direction so that as it extrudes, it now lays down in the pattern that we want it to print at.
Okay.
And then the exciting part about the whole system is that after it prints one layer, it moves up just a little bit, and then it prints a second layer. And so this allows you, with the assistance of a computer, to really design and make any type of design that you're really interested in utilizing.
And so when you make a design, track me back then to what you can do. What is it you're trying to find out using 3D printing?
Exactly. So like I said, our research group is interested in material science and electrochemistry. And so most of the time when people are doing electrochemistry, they take a set standard design of an electrode, usually a type of rod or flat surface.
Mm-hmm.
And then they use that to perform the experiments that they're interested in. But in my lab, we're interested in a wide variety of materials and also in how we can affect the material properties by changing the design of the system. And so if we can design an electrode that maybe has holes in ideal places for systems to come in and react with the electrode, or if we design an electrode that allows us to interface with another instrument so that we can look at how things are affected by electricity and interact with light at the same time, we can learn a lot more about how the materials and the electricity are interacting with each other.
Yes. So, other things that you're working on that specifically that you can talk about, or a project that has you very excited right now? Or?
Sure. Building off of the 3D printing aspect and interfacing with other instrumentation, my first paper that I was able to publish here at the University of Tulsa was on using 3D printers to design cells that could interface multiple experiments with one another. And so what we did was we took an experiment that's really hard to perform most of the time. It's an experiment called spectroelectrochemistry.
Okay.
So spectro, looking at how light is interacting with the sample, and then electrochemistry, performing our electrochemical experiment, and doing that all at the same time. And typically, you have to purchase some pretty fancy equipment in order to allow this to operate in your instrument that was already very expensive. And what we found is that we could take a design that we were interested in utilizing, and for less than $2, could get the same experimental results out of something that could then be emailed to other researchers for them to utilize as well.
Wow. And I assume if it worked in this case, there's lots of other applications.
We certainly hope so. And what we're doing now is trying to expand on that by taking different materials that we can print with and additionally making the electrodes for that type of cell, making systems that can be integrated with other types of instrumentation and performing different types of electrochemistry experiments.
Well, so the impression I'm getting is that there's a kind of limitlessness to what you're describing to me, that you could keep combining and exploring as many chemicals as there are, there's tons of options here. How do you decide what to do next? How do you go? I guess I'd like to get a better sense of in the lab when you have so many possibilities, so many things you could be looking at. How do you decide which ones are the most important and how to move forward? And then how many people are in your lab right now, for example?
Sure. So that's a great question. It's really important because I draw a lot of inspiration actually from the students that I work with in the lab. Like I mentioned, electrochemistry has a lot of different applications. So there are things like glucose meters that people use in terms of diabetes treatment, batteries, solar cells I talked a little bit about. There are systems that generate materials, so aluminum production is an electrochemical process.
Ah.
And so what we typically do is we have these wide variety of tools with all these different applications. But then students come in and they have their own interests and their own areas that they have expertise in. So for example, two summers ago, a student, Camden, came into the lab and he was really interested in medicine. And I am not a physician by any stretch of the imagination. And in fact, most of the biological materials we use just as materials.
Right.
And so he got interested in how we could develop these melanin films that I was interested in because of their conductivity properties. So they would be good for electrochemistry. Mm-hmm. Camden was interested in them because neuromelanin is found in the brain and has relationships to Parkinson's disease.
Oh, my.
And so because of his interest in medicine, he was able to take the initial progress that we had with these electrochemistry of this biological material and really try and frame it around the problem of Parkinson's disease and how we can try and use the films that we make to really analyze and understand different aspects of Parkinson's disease.
Wow. Now, this is the first time I've heard you mention or films. Could you quickly explain what that is? Is that the layer?
Sure. So in the particular case of adding a film to an electrode, what we're really doing is we're trying to make one material in very close contact to the electricity that we're applying through the electrode. And so in this case, we had a film of melanin that we put onto the electrode. And we were using the electricity to try and understand aspects of that film.
But Camden was interested in the melanin film because melanin is a biochemical, right, that is tied to, is it skin color or is something? But it's also involved in Parkinson's and then in neurochemistry. And so he was looking, he saw an application that you wouldn't have seen. And who knows, right? Do you know what's happened since then? Was that 2 years ago, you said?
So we started framing some of that work with melanin about 2 years ago with Camden on Parkinson's disease. And now, because we have so many wonderful pre-med students in our department, this project has gained a lot of traction. And so mm-hmm. we have had a lot of students that have either been working on making better films on the electrodes so that we can have better interactions with those, or we've had folks that have been soaking those films into different solutions that mimic some of the brain chemistry to understand how that film degrades or stays intact.
Wow. Now, when you say gain some traction, can you explain what that means for you? And when an idea gains traction, for example, in your lab, is that, we're getting back to that question I asked you earlier about how you decide what to work on next. So is that, does some ideas just gain traction? And what does that mean?
Anytime we make a little bit of progress in the lab, it's always exciting because it oftentimes followed by a lot of failures in the lab. So
I thought you just said there were no failures.
So in this particular project, Camden had started doing some research on these films and attracted another student, Gwendolyn, who started working on making better films onto the electrodes so we could do a better job of studying the films. And what Gwendolyn found was that there were a lot of factors that made for a bad film, and you had to get a right combination to get a good film. And so she spent an entire summer and a little bit into the semester just working out all those details that were really important for making a really
involved.
Good film. And so that's where we go from, you know, the really exciting motivation, we're working on trying to learn something about Parkinson's disease, to the day-to-day aspect. All right, what are the little parameters that we're going to tweak to make a better film to study?
Obviously, good research requires both, right? It has the meticulous drudgery. You have to do that work to have those moments of epiphany and surprise, right? And so can you give us a sense of a good day in the lab, a bad day in the lab? Does everyone stay with it because of these moments, this intermittent reinforcement of wonderful discoveries?
This is where I think people really learn about if they want to be a scientist or not. And that's actually what I get really excited about being a professor at the University of Tulsa, is we get all these wonderful students, both undergraduate and graduate students, that are coming into the lab and they're seeing what it's like. So we have a bunch of really great programs. We have the Tulsa Undergraduate Research Challenge, which allows students to do research full-time during the summer.
We have as undergraduates, as you did, right?
Exactly. Yeah. We have a parallel program in the chemistry department called CSERP, so Chemistry Summer Undergraduate Research Program. And both of these programs really allow these students to see what that day-to-day is like. Mm-hmm. And if the students really enjoy trying to design their day-to-day, performing the experiments, and learning, regardless of whether or not it worked the way that they thought, then they typically think that, hey, this research thing is something that I like. It could be something that I want to do. At the same time, we have plenty of students that come in and they say, boy, this lab didn't work, and it didn't work for a whole month before I got anything. And that's really terrible. And for me as an educator, both of those are great results because in one case, someone may have found a passion that they're really interested in. And the other aspect, they may have realized that that's not what they want to do. And so they've ruled it out. And doing that in a short time frame, 2 months, while still making some money, is a beneficial way of learning that that's not something you want to do.
I think it's so important for our students to have a chance to really experience rather than read about and learn. You know, it's the hands-on and it's the really being in it. So why don't you say a little bit more about what you love about this, but also back to, you know, what you like least about it. Are there aspects that are less rewarding?
Probably the most exciting aspect of being involved in university research is working with new scientists. Whether that's students that are just joining the lab and they're getting experience with research for the first time, or it's graduate students who are really trying to develop a new idea or thesis, or it's other researchers amongst the university and we're learning from each other and how we do these experiments. That's what I really enjoy about doing our specific type of research. Liking the least is definitely the budgeting aspect of things. So, you know, when I first got involved with research, I never thought about the dollars and cents and, you know, how do you actually pay the people who are involved with research. And one of the things that I really like about science is that people who are performing research, even at the undergraduate level, are either getting credit hours for the university or they're getting paid for it. And for me, I find that to be a really exciting thing. It was one of definitely my most enjoyable summer jobs that I ever had was doing research and getting paid for it. And at the same time, now that I'm a faculty member, I'm trying to figure out how do I make sure that the people that want to work in my research lab are able to get paid, are able to support the work that they're interested in. And thankfully, TU has made that much easier on me through programs like the Turk Undergraduate Research Challenge, the development faculty grants that they provide, and we recently got funding from the university through something called the Shark Tank program, where we're able to support a student working full-time this summer, working on a project related to making solar cell materials cheaper.
And that Shark Tank project was kind of a competition, as I recall, right? Where you had to you as the professor, had to pitch the project to get funding.
Absolutely. So
that's a President Clancy initiative, right?
It was a really exciting thing because we had all of the deans of the university and I, as a very young faculty member, got to tell them about one of our research ideas and try to explain it in a way that would be as broad as possible.
And obviously it was successful. So that's great. What haven't I asked? What do you want to make sure our listeners know about your research and your field in general?
One of the biggest pushbacks that I've always found when I start talking to people about what I do and the fact that I'm a chemist, that typically hear about how hard it is. You know, that class was my least favorite class, or I just didn't enjoy, you know, this aspect of chemistry. And in reality, it's tough. It's a difficult subject. Electrochemistry in particular has a bunch of challenges to it in the way that we try and understand and learn about the system. But what I've found is that if you get passionate about the subject, or you get passionate about the solution that you might be working towards, that it becomes really easy to put in all the work that's necessary to understand the background material. So even though chemistry and biochemistry and electrochemistry, these can be challenging topics, their usefulness and the the interesting things that you can do with that knowledge really makes it worthwhile and makes it easier to study.
So what I'm hearing is that a lot of times chemistry is presented in high school or even in college as a set of sort of disconnected facts that you have to memorize. Or as you said earlier, kind of, I better do this experiment right or I'll get a bad grade. And what you're saying is the exciting part is the having a question in mind and the exploration. So it's almost like a narrative process. You're trying to let the chemicals tell the story or something. Is that, am I making sense with that? Do you see where I'm headed? That rather than just a bunch of things floating around, it really is understanding enough of the context to see what the parts that you're doing, how they fit into a larger understanding or a narrative.
Yeah, so one of the things that a lot of people hear is that there are no stupid questions. And in science, I like to reframe that in terms of there are no worthless experiments. If we do an experiment and it fails, if we just let it fail, that's probably not a good thing to just let and not learn anything from. But if we then ask the question, why didn't that experiment work? Why didn't we see that material fall out of solution? Then by understanding why it didn't work, we've still gained really valuable information. And so that, I think, can really excite people who think of themselves as not being good scientists or not being good at science. Is how do we reframe those failures as just experiments that aren't quite finished yet?
So are there myths out there about your field that we should bust? And, you know, what do we need to know as a general public about, besides what you've already told us?
I would say, as an electrochemist, one of the myths is that we flip the switch and it works, right? Because this is mostly our experience with electricity, right, is that we flip the switch and the lights turn on, or we flip the switch and the lights don't turn on. Mm-hmm. And there's all this intricate wiring and different factors and materials that are used to connect the switch to the light bulb. And by understanding how different materials can be used and how we can use our electricity more like a dimmer, I think we can use it a lot better and also learn a lot more about different systems.
So if there are listeners who want to know more about your particular area, as well as the field in general, do you have some resources to suggest or, you know, so that people who aren't experts can get a little more sense of all the cool stuff that's happening right now?
Yeah, I would say there are two different areas that I would direct people or try and guide people with things that I find interesting. So mm-hmm. there's the electrochemistry aspects of things and the 3D printing aspects of things.
Okay.
And in the electrochemistry aspects of things, I would recommend that you don't try and just learn about electrochemistry because it's a pretty dense field. It feels abstract if you start from the way that you might learn about it in a classroom. And the real way that I find to learn about electrochemistry is to follow the passion aspect. So maybe you're really interested in solar energy. Well, learning about electrochemistry from a solar energy point of view is definitely the way to try and learn the electrochemistry. If you're interested in medicine, you know, learning about electrochemistry by trying to understand how a glucose meter works, much more interesting and worthwhile use of your time if you learn about how a blood glucose meter works and learn the electrochemistry necessary to understand that along the way than it is to just try and dive into electrochemistry. On the 3D printing aspects of things, there are a wide host of different blogs and stories and sites that try to explain 3D printing and understand it from all different points of view. My favorite way to learn about these different 3D printing techniques or concepts is to actually get on some of these newsletters from companies who sell 3D printers, because they're always trying to pitch these new products or new ideas and really try and inform you about how it works and why it's better. And so signing up for a newsletter from somebody who sells it, the company that we buy a lot of materials from is called Matter Hackers, which I'm sure I'll have to explain to the budget department here at some point. But, you know, getting their newsletter and learning about new ideas or techniques that are out there is really great.
I'm Jolie Jensen, and this has been Found at TU, a monthly podcast produced and edited by Scott Gregory at the studios of Public Radio Tulsa on the TU campus. We've been talking with Gabriel LeBlanc about his research in chemistry and biochemistry at the University of Tulsa. Please join us next month for another chance to hear a TU professor discuss in everyday language the nature and value of their research. Bye-bye for now.